Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
We're currently on the bottom of page 109. Daf Kuf Tes. Amud Aleph. And the Gemara is going to talk about the measure that is required to fulfill the mitzvah of Arba Kaisis, the four cups of wine. And I think that before I begin to actually read the Gemara inside, I think I should share a little bit of background with you. And the background is that the Torah and Torah Judaism is a faith system divinely ordained and inspired that's filled with homilies and incredible stories and spirituality and God consciousness and all that other nice stuff that you can find really probably in any faith system, or even not in faith systems. But I'm not going to say it's the thing that's unique about Judaism, but it's certainly a unique feature of the spiritual system called Judaism, is the maxim of our sages, Hamaisa hu ha'ikar. The deed is our creed. That's the main thing. The main thing is to do the mitzvah. So if on one hand, you could meditate on matzah and wine all night long, or on the other hand, you can gobble down the matzah and drink the wine and say a few words and have a half-hour makeshift seder, we would choose option two. It's better than meditating and ruminating on the mystical messages of matzah and wine, even though the mystical messages are very mystical, very spiritual, very powerful. And truth be told, we should be eating the matzah with all those intentions and all those feelings and all that fervor and all the camaraderie and the good things that come along with the seder, but that's not what it's about. It's ultimately about fulfilling Hashem's will. So people will say, Rabbi, I'm a very spiritual person. God's very nice. What does that have to do with God? What are you talking about? Spiritual. Isn't spiritual godly? So everything is godly. Nature is godly. The cars are godly. Technology is godly. Everything is godly. What does that mean? Everything is godly. Everything comes from God. God created everything. And the things that we modify is also created by God and continually sustained by God. The spiritual, or the non-tangible element of our life, is not any closer to God than the physical, tangible elements of life. The most beautiful song is not really any more spiritual than a steak. They're both part of the physical, terrestrial reality that Hashem created us in. So it's not about being a spiritual person. I mean, of course you should be a spiritual person, and you should have a sense of God consciousness pervading all of your actions. Yeah, of course you should be spiritual. But that's not what it's about. It's not about being spiritual. It's about being obedient. It's about doing what Hashem wants. So nasa, which means to do, comes first. And nishma, and study, and understanding, and appreciation, and fervor, and passion, all that comes second. Because in Judaism, the action required is paramount. Now, because this is the case, because Judaism is, in fact, primarily and overwhelmingly an action-based system of divine worship, so we're going to have to deal with something called halacha. And halacha is the most important thing. A person wants to convert to become Jewish, and they say, I feel so Jewish. I get emails like this all the time, people watching your classes, I feel Jewish. It's very nice. So what do you need to do to convert, though? Be spiritual and meditate and know Jewish history and speak Hebrew? No, you don't need to do any of those things. You know the one thing you need to do? You need to learn the halacha and do it. And if you don't learn the halacha, you don't know what to do. So it's not even a question. How could you do it if you don't know what to do? So you have to learn what to do. Leida hamaisa asher yasun. You should know what to do. And then you have to do it. And that's why in Judaism, an enormous emphasis is on halacha. It's on halacha. People say the rabbi is a spiritual leader of his flock, but first and foremost, he has to be a halachist. He has to know a halacha. He has to know how to be able to tell people what to do. And telling people what to do is equivalent to saying, what does God want me to do now? Does God say this is kosher or not kosher? Does God say this is appropriate or inappropriate? What does the Torah say? What's the halacha? So Judaism is a system of law, divinely ordained laws, sacred laws, holy laws, laws that if we follow, we're connected to Hashem. Now, because this is the case, because we're dealing with bodies of law, we have to have some kind of rigors that the law fits in. Because whenever you have law, you have rigors. You have parameters. You can have law without parameters. So for example, if we have a law in this country that says you cannot drink while intoxicated, it's a very bad thing to drink God forbid, when somebody's intoxicated. So there's a law against it. Or there's a law against you shouldn't drive your vehicle too quickly. Okay, it's not as bad as driving intoxicated. Probably also not such a good idea. Both of these have to be quantified. So what is called intoxicated? So intoxicated. Depends who. Depends which person. Some people have enormous capacity for alcohol and they don't get impaired and they're able still to control themselves and they maintain perfect judgment. And some people, they smell a cup of vodka and they're over the hill already. So first of all, you have to have a little seichel, you have to have a little intelligence also. If you know that your judgment is impaired, then you shouldn't be driving. But that's not the point. If we are going to enforce a law, if we make a law that says it's illegal to drive impaired, then we have to then create a parameter for what's called impaired. Who will be the expert? Probably people involved in the medical field. Probably people who know the biophysics of alcohol intake and the effects that it has in the bloodstream and when it begins to blur a person's consciousness. And it is true that there might be somebody who will not pass the test. And he actually does have control of his vehicle. It's in theory possible. It's in theory possible that a person will fail the breathalyzer, but he's in control. He's the kind of person who can handle his alcohol so well that nothing bad would happen. And it is distinctly possible that somebody would take a tiny amount of alcohol and they would totally lose control. Now, obviously, if they had an ounce of brains, they wouldn't get behind the wheel. But you wouldn't be able to prosecute them because they didn't technically violate the law. So the law, we cannot have everybody's own law. So, your law! So every single citizen has to register and then he gets his own set of laws written for him. It's a great theory. It's not practical. It's not possible. So what has to happen is the law that speaks for everybody, and we all have to live in accordance with the law. Does that kind of make sense? Makes sense. So in Judaism, if we have all these laws and rigors that we have to adhere to, then there has to be some kind of parameter. There has to be a system of measurement, a system of quantification, a system of being able to ascertain whether something is or isn't what it's purported to be. So one of the things we have to deal with oftentimes is measures. If they deal with volume, we deal with size. Why does size and weight matter? This is not a fashion statement. Why does volume and length or lack thereof matter? Well, it matters very simply because we have lots of things in Judaism that require items or material. And the items or material have to be a certain size or else you didn't do it. So you want to do the mitzvah of a lulav, mazel tov, that's great. What do you need? A lulav that's the right size. Oh, Rabbi, stop being silly. Any lulav is good. Well, actually, any lulav is not good. It's halacha. So you want to know? So we have to measure the lulav. Okay, who should we use? Should we use the metric system? Which system should we use? We know today, in the Western world, we're all so interconnected, and everybody's essentially a sneeze away from people on the other end of the world through technology. We still have a number of different systems. We have different weighing systems, different measuring systems. So how would we have one ubiquitous system that would bind all of us together? Who would be able to agree on exactly what size is the size? You'd actually manufacture enough rulers and enough scales and make sure that they are distributed far and wide. And what if one of them becomes bent or one of them becomes some way damaged? So then this city all of a sudden has a different measure. We have to find some kind of measure which is ubiquitous. So the Torah actually uses ubiquitous measures. What are two things which are ubiquitous? Anywhere in the world you go, you're going to find them. You're going to find people, and you're going to find vegetation. Anywhere in the world you're going to go. So generally people, there's an average size of a fist. Size of a fist is the size of a fist. The size of a finger is the size of a finger. Understandably, there are people with very large fingers. I understand there are people with very small fingers. We actually laugh about that. We say the guy has small hands. Or did you see his fingers? But that's why we notice it, because it's abnormal. But the normal, especially males, usually are an average size. So that's an average size, and therefore, fingers or fists, or the measure of the body, is actually one of the methods that's used to measure. What am I talking about? I'm talking about something like an etzba, which is a form of measurement. That's the smallest form of measurement, the diameter of a finger. What's the next thing? A tefach, a fist. What's the next thing? An amma. It's a foot and a half, size of an arm. And so on and so forth. And how an amma already is less precise because people's arm length is varies already. So we say an amma has six tefachim. A fist is a fist. A normal size hand is a normal size hand. Six fists, that's an amma. Make sense? So you want to know how big your lulav is supposed to be? You want to know how big your tzitzit is supposed to be? You want to know how big, how thick your tefillin straps have to be? We have to know these things. It's halachas. It's going to be laws. So we have to, the laws have to be governed by a system of measurements. So we have measurements. Then it comes to weight and volume. How do we measure weight and volume? People do definitely not weigh the same. People's fingers don't necessarily weigh the same. What does weigh the same? But what is always the same size? Vegetation. An olive is an olive. A date is a date. A fig is a fig. An egg is an egg. Incredibly, eggs are almost always exactly the same size. Ubiquitously. Always the same size. So these are the kind of things you hear about in rabbinic literature, in halacha parlance. You hear about a kezayis. Kezayit means like a zayit. Like an, you hear about a kebeya or a kebetza, means like an egg. You hear about a kegregeris, that means like the size of a dried date. You hear about kesevis, that's the size of a fig, a fresh fig. You hear about a betza. Oh, sorry, we did that already. And so on and so forth. So the measurements are always built around these things. So, for example, none of the measurements I mentioned are very large. The from the olive to the egg and everything in between. We're not talking about a very large amount. So how do you measure large amounts? How do you measure a mikveh? Well, the answer is very simple. You have a system of measurement, but the system of measurement always begins with a common denominator, which is always the same everywhere. So, for example, we say that when it comes to weight, there's something called a saw. And the saw has inside it six kavin. And the kav has inside it four lugin. And the lug has inside it six beitzim, six eggs. So now I know. I know that once I have eggs, I put them together. I multiply the eggs. Six eggs together, that gives me a lug. Then if I have four lugin. Now I have 24 eggs. What do I get? Four lugin, that gives me a kav. How many kavim do I need? You do the math. Six kavim. Now I have a saw. And so on and so forth. So sayim. And these are measurements which are throughout the wet length and breadth of halacha, measurements will show up again and again and again and again. So what are the things we need measurements for? One of the things we're going to need measurements for is this idea that food has to be eaten. It's a mitzvah to eat certain foods. It's a mitzvah to drink certain things. It's a mitzvah to make a bracha before. It's a mitzvah to make a bracha after. All these things have to have measurements. If I tell you have to eat, how much is called eating? In what frame of time is called eating? And then we have a whole bunch of, a series of time, which I didn't even get into how we measure time, but basic human interactions. A basic human interaction, like a moment. Time it takes to say, Shalom Aleichem Ayyav Rabbi. Everybody does that the same. Even the person who speaks Hebrew very fast, the person who speaks Hebrew slow, it's just three words. You don't have time really to make a difference. So that's a basic exchange, a greeting. So a greeting is a basic measure of time. That's a moment. A greeting is a moment. And then from there we go. Depends how long. We have this idea of how long it takes the average person to eat a half a loaf of bread. That's called B'chdei Achilas Pras. Then we have the various other things that generally take the same amount. Time now takes to boil an egg. An egg is an egg. You boil an egg, you boil an egg. So that's how we measure time. And therefore, no matter what system we would end up in, and invariably anthropology has its funny way of people evolving into different systems and people adopting different weights and measures, but invariably the Jewish people were always linked together by common halachic weights and measures. Common way of measuring time, common way of measuring volume, a common way of measuring distance or space or size. Usually speaking, we don't have an intersection between the measurement of space, which is long or short, and the measurements of volume. It's not the same kind of volume. So how long is a beitza? Is it two fingers long or three fingers long? I don't know how long a beitza is. We don't measure a beitza is a beitza. How many fingers is a kezayis? How many fists is a kesevis? It doesn't work like that. But this is going to be a rare instance where we're going to have an intersection of the two. And so that's a little bit of a preface to tonight's class. And the last thing I want to tell you about tonight's class is that we're going to be talking about the size which is required for drinking. We're not talking about eating matzah now, we're talking about the mitzvah of drinking wine. The last couple of classes have been all about the consumption of wine because there's a mitzvah ordained by our sages on the night of Pesach to drink four cups of wine. So I called it Passover 4x4. And you'll soon see why I did 4x4. Because four cups of wine are measured by four. There's a four measurement. It's It's called Etzba'ayim al Etzba'ayim, two fingers by two fingers, which we're soon going to see. The unusual intersection of the different kinds of measurements. We have already learned that the four cups of wine have to be drunk as individual cups of wine. We have already learned that the wine that's consumed has to be in the volume of a revi'it. We don't know what that is. We said revi'it. Revi'it comes from the word revi'i, which means four or a quarter. It's a quarter of something. So now we're going to find that it's revi'is halub. We don't know what that is yet. Okay, we just learned the Gemara. So revi'is. So we have this proverbial revi'is. For all we know, it could be a gallon, it could be a quarter. We don't know. Revi'is. It's just language people use, revi'is. So the Gemara at this point has got to quantify it. So how much exactly is a revi'is? And one little important detail. In the Beit HaMikdash, when Moshe Rabbeinu built the first Mishkan, so then Hashem told him to make certain weights and measures. And those measures were called the holy measures. That was the holy form of measuring. It's also known in Talmudic parlance as the desert measures, Midbariyos. Why? Because when we came to Jerusalem, we adopted a new system, like a royal metric system. And things were measured in larger number. When we came to Jerusalem, everything was added. There was a sixth added. Not a sixth finger, but everything else was added a sixth. So if something, and the sixth was added, so to speak, on the outside, which means that if you had five equal parts, you added an additional equal part. So let's say something was like $100 is made up of five 20s. So now it wasn't a 20, now it was 120. Which means, of course, that when you have five of these measures, what's five measures in one system will be six measures in the other system. Right? Six will fit into five because there's an additional sixth. So if you have an additional sixth and you have five of them, five additional sixths, six will fit into five. And that's how it was in Jerusalem for a very long time. And then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and the Sanhedrin at a certain point was headquartered in the north, in the Galilee, in a city called Tzipori. And then in Tzipori, they enhanced the measures yet again. And why they did this is a subject for a different night, but they enhanced the measures again. They added another sixth. Call it inflation, but it's not really that. So now we have three measures. We have Midbariyos, which is the desert Moshe Rabbeinu. We have Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi measure. And then we have the Tzipori measure. Now, needless to say, this created a lot of confusion. And it created a lot of challenges for us. So it created challenges because people living in different places, remember, this is, forget technology. They didn't have a telegraph machine. They didn't even have a normal post office. How are they supposed to be in touch with one another? People grew up, it could be they never left the place, the whole life they never left this place. But they try to keep the halacha. And we know that Jewish people, living apart for centuries, for millennia, had the same halachas. They were eating the same amount of matzah, drinking the same amount of wine. How'd they do that? Well, they had Torah, and Torah told them these things. But things have to be established. So this is a little bit of a preface to the Gemara we're going to learn tonight. And the Gemara begins on the bottom of page Kuftes, page 109. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said the following. Kista de Muryosa. A container for fish brine. This is once a very popular and common commodity where they would deal in what we call probably schmaltz. You know, people like schmaltz herring. Schmaltz herring is fatty. There's chicken schmaltz. There's even fleisch schmaltz. There's schmaltz herring. So the schmaltz herring is, it's not like schmaltz herring don't swim in a different ocean. They're pickled a certain way with a fatty brine. So Muryas is this fatty brine. So Rabbi Yitzchak said that there was a certain measure. There was a kista de Muryasa, da hava bitzipori. There was this container of fatty fish brine, also known in Yiddish as schmaltz, that was in this place called Tzipori. Now remember, Tzipori was a very important city for the Jewish people. It was the equivalent of Jerusalem. Not that they had a base in Mikdash, but it was the headquarters of the Jewish legal and spiritual reality. Of course, we never forgot Yerushalayim. We always pray towards Yerushalayim. We always yearn for Yerushalayim. But practically speaking, somebody had a Shalom Halacha. Where did he go? Where were all the sages? Where was Torah being taught? Where were the big academies? Where were the yeshivot? Everything was in Tzipori. That was our spiritual center. So in this place called Tzipori, where a whole new system of weights and measures was adopted, there was a particular container, and that container was called the schmaltz container, probably because they sold schmaltz in it. They probably did a lot of other things with it, but it became ubiquitously known as the schmaltz container. So, for example, a paper clip is a paper clip. Anywhere in the world, a paper clip is a paper clip. A staple is a staple. There are certain, you know, a can of soda. A can of soda is a can of soda. Actually, not Canada and the United States, it's different. But there are certain, a teaspoon. A teaspoon is a teaspoon. That's what it is. You have to have a fine measure. You have a spoon. A teaspoon is a teaspoon. That's what it is. It's a ubiquitous thing. So they have these containers. For whatever it is, for every reason, that's the commodity of schmaltz. That's where it was sold. There were not many animals. There was not that much meat in there. It's sold certainly not at that time after the Beis Hamikdash, tremendous poverty. Some chicken. And there was a lot of fish. Once upon a time, you see a lot of fish. Like in Europe, they ate a lot of fish. Why? Because that's what they could afford. Schmaltz herring was like some kind of, you know, like roast beef today. For Shabbos, you had a piece of herring. So this is a commodity. A very, very popular commodity. An affordable commodity. A commodity that this is people are all familiar with. And it was sold in a certain capsule, a certain container. So the capsule in Sipori that they used to sell this fish brine, so Rabbi Yitzchak said, Hava kimin lugo de migdasha. This was like the log of the Beis HaMikdash. And because it was the log of the Beis HaMikdash, what does that do for us? We're looking for a revius. Now you're giving me a log? So the Gemara says, Ubo misharin revius shel Pesach. That's how we measure the revius of Pesach, the size of the Pesach. Why? Let's take a look in Rashbam. Rashbam says, Kista de Muryosa, Mida shemoichin bo hamurius. This was the measure in which the Murius, the Schmaltz, was sold. Ubo misharin revius shel Pesach. Shemimale Moshe says Rashbam, it was filled. And then you took the material, the liquid that was contained in this container, and you divided it into four equal parts. And if you divide it into four equal parts, you know, I have exactly as much wine as you need for the Seder. So somebody wanted to know, how much wine do I need for the Seder? The answer is, how many people do you have? Oh, how many people? I'm having 10 people for my Seder. The answer was, get 10 kista de muriosas of wine. Because if you have 10 kista de muriosas of wine, we know with certainty that each person has to drink a kista de muriosa because it's got a log, and a log is made up of four revias, four quarters, and each glass of wine has to be one quarter a revias. All right. This is what Rabbi Yitzchak said. Why did Rabbi Yitzchak use this example? Because it was an exact measure. It was very, very common and easily available. In his time, everybody knew what it was. So that was a perfect way to describe the measure during a tumultuous period when people no longer had the Beis HaMikdash and no longer necessarily had these measures as ubiquitously anymore. Everybody was living their own life, doing their own thing. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, who lives at a later time, he says, no. He says, this is what we're going to need to do. He says, Tamniyaisa kadmaisa hava betveria. So the Tamniyaisa is a certain measure. And Rashbam says Tamniyaisa is a mida, a measure. Vahainu toman. This is called the toman and the uchla that we find in Mesechet Sota. Now, there's a lot of Rishonim who disagree with that, but at any rate, let's just say Tamniyaisa, I don't know how to translate Tamniyaisa, Tamniyaisa. Tamniyaisa was a measure. Whatever that is, it was some kind of probably eight, something with eight. Like so the eight ball was some kind of eight. I don't know. Because Tamni is eight. So Tamniyaisa kademaisa, the Hava b'Tiveria. Tiveria was also in the north. We know that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Judea was eventually razed entirely by the Romans. Every single tree uprooted. It was a desolate wasteland. Nobody lived there. Where did the Jewish people live? They moved north. They found refuge in the north. It's interesting because the first Beis HaMikdash, the north was destroyed. And everybody stayed in the south. And then the second Beis HaMikdash, the south was totally destroyed, so they went north. And that's where the Jewish community lived, the Galil, the Galilee. Galilee Elyon, Galilee Tachton, Upper Galilee, Lower Galilee. That's where our people lived. Much of what's called Lebanon today, by the way, is the Galilee. Parts of Syria are the Galilee. That's where Jews lived. So, after the period of Tiberia, of Tzipori, Rabbi Yochanan is the last of the Tanoim, first of the Amoroim. He's living in a later time. I guess in his time, the Shmaltz Herring wasn't so popular anymore, or that wasn't so widely known. So he says, Tiberia was the big city. That was the last place the Sanhedrin convened. It was in Tiberia that they disbanded. So at a later time, Rabbi Yochanan said that the old Tam Yaisa that was in Tiberia, Havas Yaseira Alda Revia. It's larger than the Tam Yaisa we use now by exactly a Revius. Oba Mishad in Revius or Pesach. So you want to know how much is a Revius for Pesach? Simple solution. You're going to take a Tam Yaisa, the old Tam Yaisa, and then you're going to take a new Tam Yaisa. And then you're going to empty whatever you have from the old Tam Yaisa into the new Tam Yaisa. And then there's going to be some leftover. And that leftover is exactly a Revius. In plain English, the difference between the large Tam Yaisa and the small Tam Yaisa is a Revius. How would people know? Simple. Take this cup, fill that one up. The amount that's left there, that's a Revius. Simple. He gave everybody an easy, ubiquitous way to do this. Remember, everybody's got to do this. This is not experts, culinary experts only. This is not scientists. This is not people who are in some way professionals in measuring. Everybody. Every from the biggest schlepper or schlamazel to the most sophisticated and talented person. Everybody's got to have the four cups. People, it had to be a way. It's easy for people to measure. So this is the measure. That's the measure. That's the modicum amount. Now, in our day and age, our poskim have analyzed in these things and analyzed them and analyzed them, and they've come up with approximations of what we think it is. And in case you think we're certain, think again. There's the famous Yurim is the Shir of Reb Chaim Noah, who most of us follow. And then there are some who follow the Shir of the Chazon Ish, which is based on the Lumdus, on the scholarship of the Tzlach. And something that Tzlach wrote about then, that Tzlach theorized that the eggs of today, somehow eggs have changed, and olives have changed, they're not the same size as they used to be. And the Chazon Ish has a different share, a much bigger share. So some follow the Chazon Ish's share, and some follow the Chaim Noah. Chaim Noah is more commonly followed. Most people follow the Chaim Noah's share, which is significantly smaller. Point being, now you understand how important it was to have a ubiquitous measure. Because in today's day and age, we actually don't have the ubiquitous measure. We're fighting about it. We're not sure. And once the Poskim give a ruling, that's the halacha. And you have to follow the halacha. But you see, now the halacha is fraught with challenges. Precisely because we don't have these exact measures here. So the Gemara says, that's really nice. It's really nice that the Yitzchak was able to, in his time, talk about Schmaltz containers. It's really nice for Rabbi Yochanan that they had the Tam Yaisa. So bottom line, if you didn't have the mazel of Schmaltz containers and Tam Yaisas, how are you going to do this? So for this, Reb Chista comes along and he gives us measures that don't change. Baruch Hashem, most of us still have fingers on our hands. So he's going to give us a finger measurement, which is a little easier to figure out. We still have challenges, but it should be a little easier. Imagine if we had to come along now and say, okay, ancient Schmaltz measures. I don't know what that is. How am I supposed to know what that is? The Schmaltz containers aren't available anymore. We have Tam Yaisas, though. Tam Yaisa, I don't even know what a Tam Yaisa is. We haven't seen one in like 17 centuries. Ah, that's a problem. Oh, I guess you're just going to have to figure it out. Figure what out? What's the halacha? So the Chista came along and he gave us some clarity as to what exactly this might mean. Now, I want to tell you something really interesting. Think about this. Is there a dispute between Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yochanan? Do they have a difference of opinion? Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yochanan. What do you think? Why? They're just talking about different objects. Rabbi Yitzchak found a container that had four revius, a full lug, And in Rabbi Yochanan's time, he couldn't find such a container. So he found a container that, compared to another container, will tell you the difference of what's in the vase. Seems on the surface that they're saying the same thing. However, some of our mafarshim say that there is actually a difference. And they point out a fascinating nuance in the verbiage. In Rabbi Yitzchak's verbiage, he finishes off by saying that this is Luga de Migdash Kemin, Luga de Migdash. This is like the lug of the Beis HaMikdash. But when Rabbi Yochanan talks about his measure, he doesn't say it's like the revius of the Beis HaMikdash. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say it's a revia de Luga de Migdash. And so, this sefer called Ma'archilev wants to say that there is a dispute. And he explains the dispute based on the notion that in the Beis HaMikdash, we always used a different system. There's something called Sheikhakas. Bigger. We always went bigger. We always went luxurious in the Beis HaMikdash. So everything was always heaping. If there was a measure required, we added a dollop. We always give a little more. That's how it was. That's the way the Beis HaMikdash needed to be. The Beis HaMikdash was a place of opulence, of luxury, of absolute freedom. Everything went. Whatever. There was no feeling of restriction or restraint in the Beis HaMikdash. As it says, Ein anius b'makam ashirus. You don't have any kind of poverty or any. There's no poor behavior in a place of true opulence, true wealth. And this affluence doesn't just mean being able to spend. Affluence means being able to do as you please, not to feel restricted, not to feel reined in or constrained. So the Beis HaMikdash had sheikhakas. Now the question is, so if the Beis HaMikdash had a larger measure, when we're sitting at our Pesach table, do we also have to adopt that larger measure? And you're going to say, sure. And I'm going to say, really? What about the person who's dealing with an upset stomach? Who's forcing himself to drink 4 cups of wine because that's what the Chachamim said, but he's having a really hard time. And guess what? That extra ounce of wine, it harms them. It's painful. It's difficult. Or how about the family? They can't really afford the wine. And every year they go into debt for Pesach. And you say, nach abissel. Well, yeah, his nickel you spend. And what about the institution that has a seder for 500 people? No, add a few ounces each person. Half an ounce each cup. Multiply it. It breaks their budget. Breaks the bank. So it's not so simple. So it's not cool to just say, don't worry about it. It's irrelevant. It is relevant. And therefore, this sefer from Archilev wants to suggest that Rabbi Yitzchak held that we follow Luga de Migdasha. Or maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yitzchak is just saying that was the Luga of the Migdash. So you can be a little less. You know, if you're near this Lug, you're good already, because Luga de Migdasha was a step above. And the Yochanan is arguing and saying, no, we have a smaller amount. And I mean, the truth is, the Ma'archilev doesn't have to be right that there's an argument. We don't look for arguments, but we could say that the Yochanan's measure and the Yitzchak's measure was different, and the Yitzchak's measure was a perfect reflection of the Beis HaMikdash measure, whereas the Yochanan's measure was not a reflection of the Beis HaMikdash measure. So maybe if you use the Yochanan's measure, use the Shmals case, you knew you had a little wiggle room. It didn't have to satisfy that amount exactly. There was a little bit of leeway. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan's measure was really, really tight, exact. It was not Luga de Migdasha, it was Lug. It was Revius, exactly Revius, so it left you absolutely no wiggle room whatsoever. So, at any rate, this is the notion of somewhat of a difference, somewhat, whether they're actually in a dispute, or they actually used the closest they could. They used the mechanism available to them, and the mechanisms available were slightly different. He found one mechanism. There was no official revius that everybody had. But the mechanism he had was the schmaltz container, and it was like the lug of the Beis HaMikdash. And in Rabbi Yochanan's time, he found this one tam yaisa that everybody has, an old tam yaisa and a new tam yaisa, and this was something he could say that at that time in the world, at least in most of the world, this would be an effective way for people to follow the halacha. Which doesn't help us. Doesn't help us. So what should we do? So now Reb Chista comes along, who's already living in the time of the Gemara. He still lives in Bavel. He doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael. and he does not have tzipori shmaltz, and he doesn't have tam yaisa from Tveria, but he has fingers on his hand. And so Reb Chisda begins now to elaborate and to speak about how it is that we might come up with the proper measurement to know what exactly is a revius, how much wine has to be drunk. So, now we go away from ancient measurements or conventions, and now we're going to talk a little bit what kind of the measurements we need to use in our time, because we have to live by the strictures of halacha. I got to have much wine to drink. Amar Reb Chisda taught, revius shel Torah, the revius of Torah, which is the sheer revius of the revius halug, which was used in the Beis Hamikdash, and so on and so forth. Etzba'ayim al etzba'ayim berum etzba'ayim. It's two fingers by two fingers. Two fingers wide and two fingers deep. And v'chatzi etzba v'chaymish etzba, and half a finger and a fifth of a finger. That's your amount. So Reb Chisda is giving us measurements with fingers. How did Reb Chisda get to measurements with fingers? But let's ask a better question. What do you mean, revius? The Gemara says, revius shel Torah, a revius of Torah. What do you mean a revius of Torah? The mitzvah of arba kaisis, the mitzvah of drinking the four glasses of wine, is not biblical. It's rabbinic. So if it's rabbinic, what do you mean the biblical requirement? What do you mean the biblical measurement? What kind of biblical measurement? Where did that come from? There is no requirement, according to the Torah, to drink a glass of wine. Not Kiddush, not Havdalah, and not four glasses on Pesach. All of this is rabbinic. So Rashbam says, well, you're making a mistake. Let me give you a few examples. There are biblical prohibitions that do involve certain measures of liquid, even wine. The first example, he says, of wine would not be a positive, but a negative mitzvah. Kigoin, says Rashbam, revius yayin shel nazir. A revius halug of yayin of a nazir. So a nazir is a person who made a vow that he's not going to drink any wine. And he has long hair and he doesn't come in contact with the dead. So what happens if a nazir drinks some wine? What happens? He gets punished. He violates the Torah. How much is called a violation? When is he in violation? If he takes a sip? If he smells the wine? If his tongue touches it? So the answer would be, you're not allowed to have any contact, and chatzi shiur, even a small modicum amount, even if it's not the required amount, is still osur menat Torah. It's a machlekes, a famous achlekes of the Biechen and the Shlokesh. If chatzi shiur, if a half amount, if a smaller than the official volume is going to be handled with or dealt or consumed with prohibited substances. So the question of that's prohibited biblically or rabbinically. And we say chatzi shir actually is asur min ha-toyra. We pass it as biblically prohibited. But you're not going to be held accountable. So if a person were to go over the speed limit here is 110 kilometers in, let's say, on the highway, and he goes 120 kilometers. Did he go over the speed limit? The answer is yes. Is he going to be pulled over? I don't think so. And if it's 120 that they pull you over, if you go 117 kilometers, they're definitely not going to pull you over. But technically, you violated the law. Which means we're all criminals. But we're not getting persecuted. What's the point? The point is that the lawmakers and the police understand that we're not robots, and those robotic cars haven't yet come into being. Soon they will. Once they will, we'll stop driving, and then everything will change. But up until that happens, you're going to have people. And people can't always press cruise control, even though not even a car even has cruise control. So you're dealing with a person whose foot is on the gas. You know, the wind comes, it's a little slippery. It's impossible for people to go exactly. So people aspire to a general speed. So if it's 110 kilometers, you aspire to be at 110 kilometers. And invariably, you're going to dip a little, go over a little. It's understood. That's where there's a leeway. But technically, over 110 is illegal. Only the law wasn't meant to be so exact. The law understands that you may go a little over. So if you set your cruise control to 112 kilometers, that would actually be a violation of the law. How are you going to prove it? If the guy was on cruise control or he was pressing his foot? So someday when all those electronic cars come in, it's probably a lot closer than we think, and everybody's car is going to have to be set to a certain speed, and somebody set his speed, they're going to be able to give you a ticket. If you're two clicks above, they're going to be able to zap you. They're just going to like know automatically, and you get an email ticket in the mail. That's going to happen. Why? Because you were supposed to set your thing exactly right. If it's 110, it's 110, not 111. Okay, so in halacha, the Torah understands that a person, there's got to be some kind of parameters here. There's got to be a parameter. So the parameter is that if somebody violates something in such and such a fashion, it's going to be prosecutable. There's something called a prosecutable crime, and a crime is not prosecutable. You're not going to be held culpable. You're not going to be taken habeas corpus, not going to be dragged in front of the court. Why? Because it's a very small amount. So in halacha, it's like that also. If a person had a whiff of pork, he's not going to be prosecuted for it. If a person willfully went and he was licking the pork, it's a problem. It's not a good thing for your neshama. But you didn't technically violate the halacha. When did you violate the halacha? When you ate a certain amount. Now, there's nothing in the Torah, per se, no liquid which is prohibited. It's all food, really. It's all edibles. The only liquid you're going to have is on Yom Kippur, when a person's not allowed to eat or not allowed to drink. However, Rashbam says there is a biblical instance where there is a liquid which is prohibited to consume, and it happens to be wine. And who is that? The Nazir. So when is the Nazir going to be held culpable? When he drinks a Revius Yayin. Now, the opinion of the Rashbam, like many other Rishonim, is that this is Halacha L'Meisha Mesinai. Shiurim are Halacha L'Meisha Mesinai. Which includes even, according to the Rosh, the shear of 12 years old for a girl and 13 years old for a boy. It has nothing to do with mature or not mature. It's Halacha L'Meisha Mesinai. Other Rishonim say otherwise. Where's another example of a liquid? Well, this is not a liquid that one would drink. This is not exactly a food, but it's still something in liquid form that would comprise a certain threshold in halacha. Human remains is a source of ritual impurity. Plasma, human plasma, is also a source of ritual impurity, assuming that the plasma came out of a corpse. So if a person bleeds, that's not called ritually impure. If a person dies, and then the wound, an open wound, Rahman al-Utsan, and blood comes out of the body, that is going to comprise ritual impurity. And the question then is, how much? And the answer is, a revius. That's how much. A revius, whether it comes from one person who's dead, or even from two mason. The blood of two people would together comprise the amount of a revius. So now, he's proven to you, number one, there's a consumption issue. The Torah actually would need to know what a revius is, so it is a revius of Torah. Number two, there's a liquid of plasma. And number three, he says, in a Beis HaMikdash issue, there's a concept of a revius shemen l'rekike nazir. The nazir has to bring, the Nazirite, when he completes his vow, has to bring certain offerings of karbanos, and he also brings certain meal offerings. And the wafers or matzahs that are brought have to be glazed with oil. So the shemen, how much oil? It has to be a revius shemen. It's also liquid. So even though the density of wine, oil, blood, plasma, they're all different densities, but we don't follow density. We don't follow that. We follow volume. So the volume of an egg is the volume of an egg. Obviously, an egg which could be certain foods which are very dense, certain foods are very light. There'd be a difference. A person had scrambled eggs, the size of an egg, it's not the same density as somebody eating roast beef, the size of an egg. But nonetheless, the kizayit, which we're going to say is an ounce. So that ounce, an ounce of scrambled eggs, and an ounce of very heavy bread, or like a whole wheat thick bread, or compared to Wonder Bread, it's a huge difference. But the amount, that's the volume. If something is filled with holes, that's something else. The sponge cake, which is all like, you know, 3/4 of it is empty little pockets of air, that could be actually a problem. Because we're not talking about air, we're talking about something which is dense. So there's no air pockets in the egg. The egg is just a lighter food. But the fact is there are other foods which are denser. So the Wonder Bread is actually filled with air. If you squeeze the Wonder Bread, all of a sudden it goes flat. But if you take a normal rye bread, you squeeze it, a rye bread is a rye bread. It's not filled with air, it's bread. But, you know, some of it is like a bread that they make from spelt. It's very thick. I mean, this is like, you can't even compare the density. We don't follow that. We follow the volume. Kezayit, kesevet, whatever. The volume, that's what we do. So if we say you're not allowed to drink on Yom Kippur, there's not a distinction that's drawn between a thick broth or something which is thin as water. There's no difference. Okay, a certain amount you're not allowed to have, that's the amount you're not allowed to have. So this is the meaning of a kezayis min ha-teira. So how much is a kezayis min ha-teira? The kezayis min ha-teira, the revias min ha-teira, pardon me, is this concept of etzba'ayim al etzba'ayim berum etzba v'chatzi etzba v'chamish etzba. That's a very strange way to, what, two fingers by two fingers by two fingers and a half a finger and a fifth of a finger. Like, strange way to do it. So, here's the problem. The problem is that the Torah never tells us what the volume of liquid is. It never gives us the liquid measure, with only one exception. And that's the mitzvah of immersion. That's what the Gemara goes on to say. Kedetanya, like we learned, the rochatz b'mayim is kol b'sari. It says that the person is ritually impure, has to rinse the entirety of his flesh in water. And that means we learn a number of things from this. Number one, we say, Shalai Yehei Davar Chaitzetz Bein Besari L'mayim. When it says, V'rochatz B'mayim Es Kol Besari, so we're saying that there cannot be anything which is between the person and the water. So if a person has adhesions or various things that are on his skin, can't go to the mikveh. And this is actually observed till today. For a woman goes to the mikveh, which is a biblical immersion, she has to do something called chafifa. She spends an hour in a bath, and you make sure that every little, even dried skin, is removed. Otherwise, the mikveh is not a good tefillah. So that's number one, biblical thing. Now the Gemara says, it also says in the Torah, the vowelization, which is halacha l'maisha mesinai, it doesn't say bimayim, it says ba'mayim. Ba'mayim, bimayim means in water, but ba'mayim means in the water. And ba'mayim means, ba'mayim b'mei mikveh, that means water that was gathered naturally, not water that was gathered by somebody, not water somebody put together. It's almost like ha'mayim, ba'mayim, the water. So the water means a special water. This water was gathered in a natural way, and of course that's how a mitzvah is made. Mikveh is made with rainwater naturally being gathered. Okay. And the other thing is, as kol b'sarai, all of his flesh, that has to be shekol gufei oilabem, that the person's entire body is going to be able to immerse at once. So if the person's not immersed at once, we don't have a kosher immersion. That's the rule. So for here, the Torah has just given us a measure. The Torah has just given us a measure now. Since it says that a person has to immerse in the mikveh at once, so we're going to take a look at the average size person. And we're going to take a look at the average amount of water that's going to be this a person would lower himself into and that his body would displace. So the average person is going to be Shalosh Amas, let's say is 4 feet. 4 feet is the average size of a man, which is till his neck. So when you take a person who's that size and he goes into water that's 4 feet high, his body will displace the water to the point that it will now rise a foot. If it rises a foot, it will cover his head. So this will automatically become a situation where he's able to be immersed at once. We say, Sholish Amos, Amma al Amma, the size of Amma by Amma, 18 inches by 18 inches, that's 3 Amot high, 3 times 18 inches, and this is the shear of a May Mikveh, and this is called Arboim So. Now, if we take the Arboim So, and we divide it, it's as if, imagine you have this cube of water, okay, this cube of volume. That's 3 amot high, and that's an amma by an amma. So if you divide it into 16 equal parts, then you end up with 2.5 saw in each layer, each like sliver of it. And then once you get from that 2.5 saw, if you take a look and you see how many fingers it would be, so if you have a tefach is going to be, so to speak, is 4 fingers. And then, because you divide it yet again, you end up with a finger, 2 fingers by 2 fingers, and a half a finger, and a fifth of a finger. That's going to be, once you have that exact size, that slice. Then you take that slice, and you cut it into 4. Then you cut it into sizes of the tefach. And then you take that tefach, and you cut it into 4. That would be, a quarter of that would be, it's ba'ayim, well, that's ba'ayim, 2 by 2 fingers by 2 fingers. Right? Because a tefach is a fist. So a quarter of that would be 2 fingers. 2 fingers by 2 fingers, the size of 2.5 fingers. That little size is the amount of a revius. and I know this doesn't make much sense to you right now. It's going to take you a long time to sit and make the mathematical calculations, but it can be done, and it can be figured out. And it was figured out. And guess what? It's 2.9 ounces. That's the amount. And that's how we know it. And this is really, really important, because it's a mitzvah to drink 4 glasses of wine. And because the mitzvah to drink 4 glasses of wine, we have to be sure that in each glass of wine, there's a minimum of revius. So let me point out some little piece of interesting trivia. When it comes to eating, we have a number of different measures of food. What's called a modicum serving? That's a kezias, that's an ounce. Okay? Then we have something called a kegroigeris. A kegroigeris means like the size of a dried, like a date. So a date, that's already, that's the size of what's considered to be large enough to be considered to put away. So this could have bearing on things like carrying on Shabbos and so on and so forth. What's a size? And then we have a cheseves, which brings a person some kind of respite when he feels hungry. So the Chum said a cheseves, which is like the size of a fig, a thick fig, like a fresh fig. A person eats that amount, it's a little under 2 ounces. No matter how hungry he is, no matter how large he is, he'll feel a moment of respite. He'll get hungry right after, maybe. Some people will last for a while, some people not. But there'll be respite. So that's the amount for that you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. Why? Because if you eat on Yom Kippur, you lose the hunger. You're supposed to hunger yourself. And I can't take away the hunger. And then finally we have the idea of kebeya. Kebeitza, or the size of an egg, that's a sheer sevia. That's the size of satiation. Who cares about satiation? We care about satiation because it's a mitzvah of the Torah that says v'achalta v'savato v'nachta, that you eat and you're satiated. And only after satiation, only then you make a bracha. So we have lots of things to worry about when it comes to volume of solids. When it comes to liquids, however, we only have two different kinds of measurements. One is called a revius, and the other is called kimaloi lugmav. Kimaloi lugmav means the amount that would fill one cheek, which is significantly less than a revius. So it's like a little more than an ounce. A little over an ounce, take a little more than an ounce and a bit, and you kind of like sift it to one side, your cheek is going to be bulging. It will be clear that something is in your mouth. So when it comes to things like Kiddush, or doing Birchat HaMazon after eating over a glass of wine, how much do you have to drink in order to fill the mitzvah? Kimalei Lugmav. If you drink like less than two, and a little over an ounce and a half or so, which fills your cheek, that's already good enough. You don't have to drink out the whole cup. However, when it comes to Pesach is not just you have to drink some wine. Kiddush, you have to make Kiddush and drink some wine. So if you make Kiddush and drink some wine, that's good enough. On Pesach, you have to drink a glass of wine. And a glass of wine means that it has to be you drink at least a revius. Because a revius is a glass of wine. Or according to another opinion, roiv revius. Most, because rubi kakule. Most of it is like the whole thing. So you understand? A lot of people don't realize this. When they sit around the Seder on Pesach, you know, they sip a little wine. You cannot sip wine if you fill the mitzvah. You have to drink the cup of wine. And ideally, you're supposed to finish the whole cup. Which is why it's a really good idea to try to get smaller cups for the night of Pesach, not giant goblets. As the Alter Rebbe says, in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tafayim Beis, he says, in Siman Yud Zayin, he says, "Kol echad midalad kaisis." Each one of the 4 glasses, each one, has to be lepachas midavias yayin, not less than 2.9 ounces. That means your smallest kiddush cup has got to be at least 3 ounces, so that you have enough for one glass. And then the Alter Rebbe says, "Lachatchila mitzvah lishtis kol akais." The mitzvah is to drink the whole glass. Afilu machzak kamer revius, even if it's 6 ounces, 7 ounces, 10 ounces, if that's the glass you're using, mitzvah, drink 4 glasses of wine, drink the whole glass. Even though by kiddush of other yamim tovim and of Shabbat, then it's lachatchila day b'shtias melei lugmav, it's enough to drink melei lugmav, which melei lugmav could mean, in some opinions, could be 2 cheeks. Kim melei lugmav means 1 cheek. Melei lugmav is actually more than a revius. So even if you want to say somebody has a very large cup, it's a cup with 10 ounces, a tumbler, make kiddush on a tumbler. So if he drinks 2.5 ounces, 3 ounces, is good enough. He drank a little lugmav, both cheeks. He doesn't drink most of it. Or you have to drink at least kimelei lugmav, which kimelei lugmav means at least roiv revias, most of a revias, like 2 ounces at least, around 2 ounces. Mikol makayim bedalad kaisin shal Pesach, with the 4 glasses of wine of Pesach, yichmiru chachamim. The sages are very stringent, and they said you have to be lishtais kol hakois lachatchila. You got to drink the whole cup to begin with. Ubediyeved, but if you can't do that, at least if you drank most, which is not 51%, say it's a reiva nicker, an obvious 51%. So then yotza. But he says, if you drink only 50% of the cup, but you have a large glass of 10 ounces, loy yotza. This is really important because people don't realize this. They think they're being heroes and pouring large glasses of wine. You're not fulfilling the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to drink the glass of wine. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe says later on in Shulchan Aruch, Tzarech Lizor Lechatchila, you have to try Lishtos Reiv HaRevias Bevas Achas. You have to try not to sip the wine, but to drink it, at least most of the Revias. That means at least 2.5 ounces has to be drunk at once. Minimum 2 ounces drunk at once. Sheyista B'shtia Achas. One drinking. Lo Yafsikenu Lishtos Shtia. It's not you sip a little and sip a little more. And so if the dry wine is hard to drink, that's not the right wine for Pesach night. What wine should you drink on Pesach night? Wine that's easy to drink. A sweet Kiddush wine. A wine that's easy. So now we have 2 things. Number one, we know we have to get glasses that are of a normal size. Otherwise, we're going to be in a situation where people are not filling the mitzvah. Number two, we have to get the kind of wine that people can knock back easily. This is not your fancy Merlot, because that's not made to knock back. That's why Kiddush wine is traditionally, people laugh at it. It's lousy wine. They're right. It's not made for the people who swish the wine and spit it and smell it and tell you which vineyard it grew and when it was picked. That's not what this wine is about. Just get to drink the wine. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, don't have these wine glasses with narrow, they get narrow on top, even though that's a proper wine glass, because it traps the aroma of the wine, right? The wine that's coming gives off a smell, and because it's narrow, it traps the aroma, so you go like this. You sniff the wine, and supposedly you could tell me which Bordeaux it grows on because you sniffed it. Maybe, I don't know. But it's nice for drinking wine. It's not nice for Pesach night. That's why you'll always see the Kiddush cups. They always have a lip that goes out. No Kiddush cup goes in. The Kiddush cups go out. Why? It's made to be easy to drink. Now, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, okay, it's not as serious because there isn't a mitzvah to drink a glass of wine. Mitzvah to make Kiddush over a glass of wine. But on Pesach night, the mitzvah is to drink the glass of wine. And that's why our sages were going to such lengths to try to describe what is a revias. So therefore, my friends, it's really important, if you want to fill the mitzvah of Arba Kaisos, get yourself the right glasses, get yourself the right wine, and make sure that you're able to drink as HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us through his sages, through the Chachamim. And when we fulfill this mitzvah of wine, which is connected to Cheirus, which is connected to liberty and freedom, we come closer to the time of true cheiros, of true freedom and liberty for all of us, with the coming of Mashiach, b'mheira, b'yameinu, amen.